Today's episode, Georgia quarterback sues the Florida coach. Someone got paid big in the Big Ten. Schools are broke and looking to get some private capital. And Lincoln, Nebraska, come get your boy.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
You're bringing more to the table than Pat.
Russ Dellinger.
How big was the fish?
And SI's Pat Forney.
Put him on a barge out in the Pacific.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And it's late May. There shouldn't be a ton going on in college football. But we have this delicious possibility that has arisen. Maybe it's far-fetched. We will see. But we are now staring at a sport where the possibility exists that in, say, 2025, the fall of 2025, the week before the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, Georgia, Florida, meeting in Jacksonville, the head coach of Florida might have to pay out damages in a lawsuit to the starting quarterback of Georgia. I like to say I've seen everything in this sport, but that would be a new one. This would require a lot of good timing for those of us who just love absurdities, and probably a decision that I'm not really sure legally is going to happen. But can you imagine if on the Wednesday, Florida coach Billy Napier would have to wire damages from a lawsuit to Georgia starting quarterback Jaden Rashada?
And then probably lose to said quarterback on
lose.
The field. Yeah.
While design. Well, we're going to switch to cover two here. Oh, wait a minute. I got to send the guy 350 G's. We have seen coaches pay quarterbacks through the years.
Yeah.
Opposing quarterback.
Yeah. And being legally obligated to do so via lawsuit.
Anyway, I'm excited. Just at the possible. Georgia quarterback sues Florida coach. Love it. What a sport. And it's May. So let's go. Now, the we know here, I will recap though, the saga of Jaden Rashada, 4-star quarterback out of Pittsburgh, California, class of 2023. I mean, the guy really only graduated high school a year ago, and so much has happened. So much. He early enrolled, so it wasn't, it's a little bit longer, but still, what have you done, class of 2023, in your year? Since your high school graduation. Well, Jaden Rashada has done a lot. So Jaden Rashada is excellent quarterback prospect. He originally commits to Miami. And per this lawsuit that he has filed against basically almost everybody at Florida, except Florida, Jaden Rashada originally commits to the University of Miami. He's going to be the quarterback there. And in this lawsuit that he has filed against Billy Napier, other people, Hugh Hitchcock, Hugh Hathcock, the booster up at Florida, and the former Gator Collective, and some other people, but not the University of Florida itself. He details and alleges that he had a $9.5 million NIL offer from LifeWallet billionaire and huge Cane fan John Ruiz, and that's part of why he was going to go play for the Canes. Now, Ruiz has later denied this, that there was a $9.5 million offer, but he, enjoying the lawsuit against Florida, has said that the Rashadas are great people, and so who cares? But anyway, who knows what's going on? Sounds good. Rashada's going to go to Miami. It's probably not going to be for nothing, and it's going well, but Florida keeps recruiting him. And all of a sudden, the Gator Collective, which is this collective run by Hathcock, they, according to this lawsuit, offer a $13.85 million deal to play in Gainesville. That's going to be paid out a little over 4 years. $13.85 million for a four-star quarterback. In the 2023 draft, you got that much money if you were the 28th pick in the draft to play in the NFL. And they're going to give it to a four-star high school quarterback. But anyway, so the deal included like a $500,000 signing bonus basically in December of Rashada's senior year. And then it was going to be $250,000 a month for all of 2024 or three, I don't know, whatever, $250,000 a month, then $291,000 a month, then $375,000 a month, and then $195,833 a month. Also known as the Pat 40 salary scale.
Yeah. Buddy, if it was, I wouldn't be on this podcast.
This pod is raking money.
No, you would only be on this podcast. Yeah, that's all you would be doing is the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, that's accurate. That's accurate.
Some of you lazy, lazy, ungrateful listeners would get your friends to listen so we get a few more listeners
around here.
Maybe we too could experience what Jaden Rashada was going to and find out what it's like to get $250,000 every single month.
No,
you got to go listen to Joe Rogan. Like, he doesn't have enough. Oh, I got to listen to the Kelce brothers. Oh, yeah, they really need the money. They need the support. I mean, come on, people.
Yeah, anyway. We could do better pods if we actually had fewer other jobs and we just could podcast.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Help us out.
Do more research. Well, anyway.
Pay more attention.
But fine, keep listening to the Kelces. That's fine. Taylor's boyfriend. I mean, it's not easy being Taylor's boyfriend. How's he going to make any money? All right. Needless to say,
listen to his brother slander secretariat.
Oh, yeah. All right. We're off.
We don't even go.
I don't want to get Pat going on horse racing. All right. So needless to say, someone offers that kind of money, you're going, see you, Miami. I mean, nice down there, but I'm going to Gainesville. Now, As an aside, if you do recall, Jaden Rashada had a couple SMU students as his agent. And that might be like...
Yeah, right.
I mean, the good old days of the year one, whatever, year one and a half of NIL. Yeah.
I totally make this work, dude. I got this.
It's amazing. Yeah.
I took an econ class and a personal finance class. I think I got this under control.
I totally talked this billionaire into giving you $13.85 million. Totally legit. Anyway, I don't know what happened. I'm sure he got excellent representation. So he flips to Florida. Now, part of the flip to Florida, we now find, which is pretty funny, is the Gator boosters had to pay Ruiz, the Miami booster, $150,000.
It's tremendous.
Now, that's a six-figure check. I know these guys got a lot of money, but that's got to hurt. That's got, like, you hate, if you're the Florida guy, you hate the Miami guy.
Yeah, and you got the Miami guy sure hates you.
He hates you. You got to cut him a $150,000 check. And I mean, that's going to sting even over a well-aged single malt. So one rich guy cutting a rival rich guy for a QB that neither one of them ended up getting. Again, college athletics. It is just fantastic. So off to Florida we're going. We're committing to Florida. However, along comes December and the $500,000 signing bonus does not materialize. Gasp. Wait a minute. This might be too good to be true.
I thought my sophomore in college got me a solid deal.
These guys calling the dorm at SMU. Call the frat house. It's pledge week, man. I ain't got time to make this deal. All right. So anyway, the deal doesn't seem to be going so well. We come to December 21st, National Signing Day. And Rashada is still committed, though, to Florida. There's a lot of obvious concern. Now, according to this lawsuit, there's lots of contact between Rashada and Billy Napier, the Florida coach, and Florida's former director of NIL and player engagement, Marcus Castro Walker. Rashada's father, Harlan, says in the lawsuit that Napier relayed that Jaden would receive $1 million from Hathcock if to sign his national letter of intent, Additionally, Castro Walker told them that Napier would, quote, get it done. Now, we have no text messages here. No, this is a he said, he said. We have not heard from these guys. I'm pretty sure they're going to say, yeah, didn't say that. And this is where this lawsuit, I'm not sure where this is heading. But it's good for our purposes. Oh, it's very good for our purposes.
It's very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Content. The Napier press conference on National Signing Day, I believe, was like delayed 45 minutes, and maybe stuff's getting sorted out. So it's like, just sign. We'll get the other guy will get you a million. I don't know. It's possible. It's possible. Anyway, Rashada signs. No million ever arrives. It's like they didn't give me the half million. Maybe they'll give me the million. No. It's like you keep sending money to the Nigerian prince, right? It's like this time it's going to work. Anyway, it all blows up. It becomes this big story. Rashada gets out of his national letter of intent with Florida. He winds up at Arizona State for a year, where his dad actually played football. And then after one season, he is now transferred to Georgia, where he's expected to be the backup this year, but very well could be the starter in the future. He didn't play. He got injured at ASU, but he wasn't bad. He had some throws. I mean, he's pretty good. So here's the lawsuit. These actions, this is a quote from this lawsuit, these actions culminated with Coach Napier himself vouching that UF alum were good on their promise to Jaden receive a million if he signed with UF on National Signing Day. Defendant Castro Walker leveraged the coach's promise that Napier would get it done and threatened on National Signing Day that if Jaden did not sign a national letter of intent with UF, Coach Napier might walk away from Jaden entirely, and so on. So this deal apparently between the Gator Collective and Jaden Rashada could be terminated at any moment for any reason by either side. Again, that's not a contract.
No. No. But a lot of them are like that. Yeah. A lot of the collective contracts are like that, and they're not really contracts.
Yeah. That's not a contract. That's just a thing.
No.
Okay? Like,
sign this thing.
If you get married and you go, oh, yeah, but I can date anyone else I want at any point, you're not really, like, no, that's not how this works. So this is not a contract if you can just walk. I don't know what, I'm not sure what it was, but there was a cocktail napkin or something involved. They can't really sue for breach of contract. It's basically a tortious interference case. Basically, I would have gotten the money at Miami, but you guys promised you this other money, so I went with that, and I didn't get my Miami money or anywhere else's money. Good luck. Not sure that one's going to hold up, but we'll see. You know, these things go all sorts of different. You can sue anyone for anything, and you can say anything in said lawsuit. Doesn't mean it's going to actually occur. Pat, thoughts?
I mean, it's certainly an unwelcome headline for Billy Napier, who's had enough unwelcome headlines, mostly because he hasn't won very much in his first couple of years and is heading into a must-win season. But as you said, this could be like a house of cards that is easily blown over. But it does reveal, you know, at least one side's alleged dealings of an absolutely screwball deal, the likes of which, you know, used to probably go on a lot under the table behind the scenes, and this one became much more public. But when you had various schools sliding various payments to players to try to get them, there was a lot of rumor about what was going on. Now we're seeing how the sausage is getting made here in the NIL era. In some places, some of it's fine, but this is pretty wild. And yeah, it's Rashada has involved three of his four schools in his one season as a college football player in this lawsuit. Miami, where he was committed, Florida, where he was signed, Arizona State, where he transferred. Oh, but now Georgia, where he's apparently allegedly going to play. And yeah, he was an okay player. You know, he was a true freshman on a bad team. So I don't know how much to read into the numbers, but he played three games. Their one victory was over Southern Utah. They lost to Oklahoma State. They lost badly to Arizona in the last game of the year. His body of work, 53% completion percentage, 112 passer rating, 4 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. We'll see if he was really worth all that trouble. He may eventually be. He may be fine. And the Georgia may be a good spot where you go sit behind Carson Beck for a year and get maybe the maturing that you didn't get as much of this last year. But this right now looks like a lot of trouble people went to for a guy who's just a guy. We'll see again how he turns out. But this is classic college sports where there may have been a major overreach and overinvestment amongst rival boosters to try to get somebody for their school.
It's truly incredible when you look back probably about 3 years ago, right around the time NIL came to be, maybe even before it was implemented, in the predictions that people made inside and outside of college athletics about what was coming, which was you're going to have boosters gather together. They're going to disguise deals as NIL and pay players for pay for play. There's going to be promises that are broken. There's going to be lawsuits. And then in the end, NIL will just be an era, in a way, an era with an asterisk in the record books, and we'll move on to revenue sharing. It's amazing. Everything has happened just as I think a lot of us have written and a lot of people have said inside and outside the industry. We're following right along the path here. And this is, I think this is the second NIL related lawsuit, but obviously the most interesting, right? In I wonder how many of these situations occurred and we didn't have them, you know, go public, and we certainly didn't have a lawsuit. I am guessing it's in the hundreds of cases where a player was promised X and didn't get anything or got a portion of it, and either just quietly entered the transfer portal and left, didn't sign, or is still at the school and just taking what he's getting. I think this is occurring quite a bit. And it's the one area maybe where, although Dan might disagree, where college administrators really are maybe at least a little justified in having some kind of rules in, quote, guardrails, Dan.
The guardrail is the court.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
That's the guardrail. But there's no – what guardrail are you coming up with in college athletics that's going to stop this? There is no rule. This is, let me tell you what used to happen. Okay, they give them the 150, and then they renege on the 13 million. It wasn't that big a number.
Yeah.
And Jaden Rashad is blackmailed and can't say a damn thing. That happened thousands of times. Now he's got all of the reasonable protections of a business entity and a citizen of the United States of America. The guardrail idea that you are going to get some investigators in Indianapolis that were going to run around and put in rules and say this or that or the other thing, that was the waste of time. So I agree. This has played out exactly as it's going. We know where this is heading. Their guardrails, they keep trying to throw speed bumps like at the Indy 500. It's like they're going to run 500 miles. They're going to go keep going around until we know where it's going to end. Stop trying to. That would be my thing. There's no guardrail stopping this. Guy promised something, lied, didn't happen. Now he's got all the protections he needs. Now it's a little juicy of a story, but so wasn't Nevin Shapiro.
Well, I just want. Yeah, true. I just wonder if in order to prevent, like, you know, this getting to this level of maybe a long drawn out public court battle, if you did have some enforcement entity that could enforce something to prevent this, that would be ideal. But you're right, even in this new era that we're about to enter, this other era,
it's era, E-R-A or E-R-R-O-R. Both.
Both.
The both. NIL
yeah,
error.
There you go. Yes.
I think it's both.
Yes, this error.
Yeah, it could be either one. It could be either one. Yeah.
But it's also, you know, the claim is that the new enforcement arm is going to have more teeth and going to be able to enforce booster payments and pay for play and all that. You know, and again, I think we all have our doubts on that. But that's the plan, is that they're going to strike this settlement deal and everything, and they're going to have more teeth to an enforcement arm based around the injunctive relief or whatever as part of the settlement.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Dan, but I'm largely on the side of Ross here, that a little bit more structure could help, if not alleviate some of these things, at least help you pursue a remedy for them. Who knows how long it might take Jaden Rashada to get his money if he's actually entitled to this money. But at the very least, if you've got some bad actors involved at the University of Florida who could be called out and then distanced from the program, that's probably a good thing. So it is a wildly imperfect system. We have seen NCAA enforcement be overmatched in a lot of areas, and especially right now, like, where do they even start given the current attorney general's ass whippings they've been getting in court and trying to enforce the rules? That's why they need an entire, like, new rule structure and mechanism for enforcing them.
So I don't want to go too far down this path, but like, what do you want to happen? I don't think Hugh Hathcock is having a great week.
No,
he's been called out in a federal lawsuit. What do you want? Like, do you want Florida to be punished? Like, scholarship reduction? Like, what can you even do? Like, what bad business deals happen every single day in every single walk of life?
They do. But what exactly is the punishment so far for this bad deal?
They're 11-14, and Napier could.
Oh, that's punishment for bad coaching.
They got four recruits. Yeah. Everyone knows the Gators' promises may not pan out. I don't know, but like, what would they actually do? I don't know what's the end goal other than we must do something. You can have your investigative body, but it's not going to change the actions of these guys.
Well, first of all, if you're bringing the collectives or these sort of deals more in-house, theoretically, the Hugh Hathcocks of the world can be
that would be fine.
Yeah, either discouraged or dismissed.
What they need to do is make the players employees or something close to employees, whatever, pay them contractors, and then they need to negotiate. Collectively bargain with a player's union or something close to a union right now. And then the extra inducements beyond salary can be actually done in the WNBA, the Las Vegas Aces. And I may get this story slightly wrong. I apologize, but the players are being paid almost as a group. I think every player on the Aces is getting paid by the Las Vegas tourism industry to do some kind of promotion, right? And the WNBA, basically the NBA, is looking into that because that would be an unfair advantage for the Las Vegas Aces. It would be additional income for every player beyond the salary cap. So there's certain ways that, like, NIL, if you will, is not allowed, right? Like, Kansas City wants to keep Patrick Mahomes. The city of Kansas City can't just say, you know, we'll give you this money or something like that. The Chiefs fans can't just come up and give extra dough. Obviously, there are ways to make extra money, and you might make more money if you're in Los Angeles or New York than you would if you're playing somewhere else, particularly NFL may not, obviously doesn't really matter, but other sports. So there are ways. They need to get serious. I just think spending your time trying to figure out rules that would prohibit this, it was a bad deal. My take on this is that the player was a little naive and he went for it. And there we are in the story. So I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they will create their guardrails. I just don't know what guardrail stops this. And I think a federal He has all the remedies that the law allows right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, we'll see where this thing goes. I will say, too, and I know you are not a fan of this, but if there is a database that shows what the general pay scale is for four-star quarterbacks, then he might know, you know what, this deal sounds too good to be true. I ain't going with that deal.
That would help them, I'm sure. I just would never do that if I was one of these players, because you're giving up a bargaining rights. And then every school also knows what the going rate is, and everybody else. You wouldn't, you know, nobody else, you wouldn't want that. But I wouldn't do it. I don't think that's the biggest issue here, though. And obviously, if we get to more direct pay, as we're going to get to in these stories, because a lot happened on Tuesday. It was like a wild day in college athletics. So my one more thing to add here, and Ross had to jump away on a call. That's why he's not talking part-time. Now he's working. He'll be back. My favorite part, I read this Pete Nakos, great reporter for On3. Good dude. And he had a line in his story. Sources told On3 that Georgia head coach Kirby Smart was aware of the lawsuit being filed and signed off on it. Oh, I bet he did.
I bet he did.
Wait. You want to Jayden sue? The
Gators Florida tried to screw you over? Go get them, baby.
Get it out there, baby. You want to sue the Florida coach? I'm okay with it. You pursue that.
Cocktail right. Party has not been the most competitive rivalry recently.
No.
But this might be exactly what we need to at least put a little more juice into it.
Yeah. All right. We'll be back right after this message. All right, part two of the Wild Wild West. I got four acts here, four act play.
Oh wow!
Dan, I think you're all like auditioning for narrative podcasting here. It's kind of setting up a whole plot.
Damn right. We could do a serial, right? Well, I don't know what they call them. Yeah. I don't know. All right, Wild Wild West. Big Ten Conference released its tax records. I think all of this plays in. We have Rashada. We have this. It's what you watch. How genius this is! Big Ten released its tax record, brought in $880 million in revenue in 2023. Record, and has now surpassed the SEC. So the Big Ten fans can cheer because we care about revenue.
That's right. The sport. They won the money game.
Won the money game. Congrats. Also won the national championship.
True.
Most notable to me. The highest paid employee at the Big Ten last year, was former Commissioner Jim Delaney.
That's just tremendous.
Jim Delaney, who retired in 2020, was the highest paid employee at the Big Ten. Sportico put it all together. $5.8 million he made. Per Sportico. $5.8 million. Now, we talk about Jaden Rashada at one point could have been making $375,000 per month to actually quarterback the Gators. You know what? How much $5.8 million is a month? $483,333 a month.
To be retired.
To be retired. Okay? I don't want to hear a word about Jaden Rashada's deal being too good to be true. You know what's too good to be true? Getting nearly $500,000 a month for a job you ain't done in 3 years. Yet one of the too good to be trues was not true, and one of them was true, and it's the better deal. This is why Jaden Rashada is dealing with the whole shady situation, is because guys like Jim Delaney, who ran college athletics for decades, dragged their feet on everything, kicked the can down the road, ignored all of what was coming along, wasn't enough money, except when constructing contracts that took care of amateur athletic administrators in absurd amounts. So absurd that 3 years after retiring, you're still the highest paid guy in the league, and you made $5.8 million. Jim Delaney and that ilk took all the money and said, we ain't got any for Jaden Rashada. And we're going to get to part three and four because he was going, if you know what happened on Tuesday.
Oh. Yeah,
good, that's... good gig if you can get it, eh, Pat?
Amazing. And yeah, this is Jim Delaney. Let's say this, did more, as much as anybody in college sports history, to make athletic departments and athletic administrators rich with the Big Ten Network, but also arguably was the biggest obstructionist to making the players even moderately wealthy. The biggest obstructionist. He had, for a long time, the biggest voice in college athletics. Sat atop one of the two biggest conferences, but was extremely influential across the entirety of it. He was a staunch amateurism advocate and a status quo advocate and a believer that education and scholarship was payment enough. And he's admitted since then that, yeah, maybe we dragged our feet too much. But now when when
was that interview conducted on a yacht?
Which yacht? Probably several of them. But no, when the entire enterprise has been laid bare and is being completely flipped now, you want to look at one person who was as responsible as anybody for it taking until 2024 for this to happen? Jim Delaney, congratulations on your $5.8 million retirement pay.
Hey, I'm jealous.
And still incredibly influential in college athletics, right? I think he's various times consulted or is consulting with the Rose Bowl, the Orange Bowl, the Big Ten, maybe another one of the small conferences as well. So very involved, I think, in the background of college athletics especially in the Big Ten. I think the move from Kevin Warren to Tony Petitti, I don't know that there was a whole lot of relationship and communication between Jim Delaney in his immediate replacement and Kevin Warren, but I think there is with the new regime in the Big Ten.
He's my hero. Can pull this off. You can pull this off. But anyway, I digress. Why did they not do anything previously? Well, there you go. Anyone thinks it's absurd Jaden Rashada was offered that much money? This is way worse. That guy doesn't even, he retired. Yet here we are. Okay. Also, Act Three. The House case. We've been discussing it. We're up for a vote. $2.8 billion in damages are owed to former athletes for the use of their name, image, and likeness. The framework approved Tuesday by the Division I Board of Directors is all coming from Ross's great reporting on Yahoo Sports. Go check it out. NCAA will fund 41% of the damages, $1.1 billion. The schools will fund 60%, $1.65 billion over a 10-year period. The power conferences will pay $664 million of that money. And the other 27 non-power conferences will pay $990 million. So of the $2.8 billion, about $2.1 of it is getting paid either by the NCAA Central Fund or the non-power conferences. At issue here, people are voting. I'll let Ross make a prediction, but it seems like this is going to get done. In Ross's story, one belief is that because we raised the point, if you're America East, you're going, we didn't deny anybody a right to make NIL money because there isn't a whole lot of NIL money in our place. Nobody, you're the Patriot. No one at Holy Cross was going to become Caitlin Clark, Caleb Williams. So what do we got to pay? Well, they got to pay $2.5 billion of the power of the money because it's not just each kid's going to get an equal share. $2.5 billion of the $2.8 could go to Power 5 football and basketball players. So that is a tough pill for the non-power schools, the non-football playing school conferences, all of that. However, a sharp person gave me a good reason for that, that actually will play out well. But Ross, is this deal going to get done?
Yes. Yes. I would be shocked if it does not. We've had really, I guess you could say, 2.5 of the 6 entities that as part of the suit that need to approve it have approved it. So the Big 12 and the ACC presidents voted and adopted it on Tuesday. As well, on Tuesday, as you mentioned, the half is the NCAA Division I Board of Directors, which approved the financial funding plan that you're referring to. The other half of the NCAA's approval will come from the Board of Governors, potentially at some point Wednesday or Thursday morning. And then we'll have 3 of the 6, Big Ten, SEC, and Pac-12, should come over the next, 36 hours, maybe 24, 36 hours. And at that point, certainly by, I would guess, by Thursday evening, certainly by Friday, you will have the authorization, as people term it in the legal realm, of the settlement terms. So long way of answering your question, Dan. But yeah, it's happening. And I don't think anything is stopping it. The obviously the non-FBS conferences want it to be stopped. I think it's too far along down the line. Their commissioners, the 22 commissioners, they were first learned about this 2 weeks ago, they say, from the NCAA. A reminder that the NCAA and the power leagues, more so the power leagues, I think, have been negotiating with plaintiffs' attorneys for 9 months. And so just 2 weeks ago, they presented the updated kind of agreed upon terms to these 22 commissioners, which include this funding model. And the one thing you didn't mention, Dan, is how they came up with this funding model. And I can go through it really quickly, but it's all based around, despite the back damages, a majority of them, 75% going to football, another 15 basketball. So despite 75%, and we don't know that for sure, I should say, that's like a witness in the case testified to that, an expert, that 75% will go to Power 5 football. So despite 75% of back damages potentially going to Power 5 football players, the formula is based around basketball money because that's the only money the NCAA controls. They don't control CFP money. So in order to reduce a membership's NCAA distribution, it's got to come from the basketball, mainly the men's basketball distribution. And they basically created a formula where starting in 2016, they based it around a school's distribution amount or 9-year stretch. And so if you had 5% of the NCAA's total distribution, your league pays 5% of the back damages. That's kind of how they did it. And it's why, and I unearthed this yesterday to certainly a lot of clamoring, it's why a school like the ACC will pay more than the SEC, actually, because they had more success in the NCAA men's basketball tournament during that 2016 to 2014 stretch to determine the reduction formula, determine the amount of reduction. So it's certainly an interesting way to do it, and it's definitely taking criticism.
Damn that Coach K. He's coming back. Coach K's coming back for your wallet.
Go ahead, Pat. I did have an ACC official text me about the basketball situation, and he said, "Interesting. Our greatest strength is now a negative."
How about like St. Peter's makes that run for the Northeast Conference and the whole league's like, "Oh, we're getting shares." Ah! And it's like, "Oh, yeah. God, it killed us." It's cost me another $75,000. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah. No, I mean the smaller conferences by all appearances are taking it in the shorts on this, as we did talk about earlier in the week. And this is probably a bad analogy, but it's like there was a diamond mine sitting in this exclusive neighborhood where the rich people lived, and they were getting money off the diamond mine, but now they're getting taxed for it. And they're like, hey, you people over in like the blue collar neighborhood, you're going to have to pay some of these taxes too. It's like, wait a minute, we didn't get any of the diamonds. So that's the rub there. And yeah, this is a done deal. As Ross said, this is game over. It's happening this week. I think everybody is heading towards that. And you did have a good quote from Kessler. I think it was you, Ross, that said, basically, we don't care where the money goes. You know, like, who pays it? We just want it paid so that we can then distribute it to the athletes. Now, I
or
did
they
have...
they can get their cut.
Well, the lawyers are going to get... Yeah. They're getting a hell of a cut.
At least $100 million.
Yeah, they're going to get... Getting, they could get a quarter. I mean, you could get a third. Probably less. But they're going to get their cut. So if you're Jeffrey Kessler, hey, man, give me my big slice of the pizza. The rest of y'all fight over the rest.
I did have someone from one of the aggrieved 27 conferences make an interesting point to me the other day that these are largely football damages. Why are they still suing the NCAA instead of suing the college football playoff? Why has nobody sued the CFP? Since that's where the actual money, football money, is. And there's a lot of it. And there's going to be a lot more. So, you know, the fact that basically college football... Bill Hancock.
Somebody served that dude a suit. Yeah, he's like in his kitchen. Like, they even have an office? I don't even know if they have an office.
They got an office down there in Texas.
I'm only kidding. They didn't used to. When it started, it was like Bill in his den, wearing a sensible sweater and answering the phone with great... Welcome. No, I'm kidding. All right, let me give you the counter on this. Smart guy pointed this out, and I'm in full agreement, okay? And the smaller conferences pipe down. I think Charlie Baker to save the NCAA basketball tournament. And here's why. 10-year deal. 10 years these guys got to pay out. We just said of the $2.6 billion, $2 billion has got to come from small conferences and the NCAA. The only revenue those places have is the NCAA basketball tournament. So if the power schools were going to, you know, they've done some saber rattling. We'll just do our own tournament. Maybe we'll just step out. Let's do this or that. They need these up. They got $2 billion incentive to say we're sticking with the current plan because there's no other way for these smaller schools, the smaller leagues, and the NCAA central office to pay their share, which is worth $2 billion. So there is now an incredible reason for the NCAA basketball tournament to not go to just a power school event, which no one on earth actually wants.
For 6 years. That's when the contract runs out.
But they owe 10 years. They got to pay this money over 10 years.
They do. The settlement is 10 years.
You bankrupt these guys, you say you're out of the NCAA basketball tournament. Northeast Conference is like, we're Division III, baby. We don't got the money.
Good point.
So they need them to have a revenue. Now, obviously, you get to year 6, 7, 8, 9. There's less. That's not. But as of when this is done, there's a $2 billion incentive for the SEC, Big Ten in particular, but ACC, whatever, to say, we're keeping the tournament as is. And you know what? I'm going to take that as a victory because it's the first time we've had an incentive to do that other than, the theory that you need Oakland and St. Peter's and Abilene Christian, or let's do it out of the goodness of your heart, which, of course, never really resonates too well in college athletics.
Well, so a couple things. We've talked a lot about the argument that the small conferences are making, which is quite clear, right? But there is the other argument on the other side that I think Dan touched on. And on the other side is probably the NCAA National Office and the Power Leagues that really negotiated this. And I think they're saying, number one, right, part of the agreement is staying together for 10 years, the Power Leagues staying with everybody for 10 years through the duration of the settlement. Number two, and this is something you hear from Power Conference people quite a bit, it is – this is not only a Division I rule, and you are in Division I as well as us, but you upheld these rules that are apparently, as we know, against the law. You upheld these restrictions, these player restrictions. Not only that, but they will tell you that the smaller leagues blocked the changing of some of these rules in the past. So now, could the power conferences have gone and used their autonomous powers to maybe make some of these changes? Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. But certainly that's the argument on the other side is, hey, look. And then the third argument, I think, from the power leagues is you're not going to probably be opting into this revenue sharing. We are. So we're going to have to spend what really amounts to, right, if you do the low end, if you do $20 million for each power conference multiplied by 10 years in 70 power teams, right, you get a number of basically $1.2 billion a year in future spending, revenue sharing. So they're saying we're doing that as well. You have to count that in to the total as well.
Right. So not as lopsided. So stop your belly aching, America East. I don't know if they're complaining.
It's still fairly lopsided, but there are, you know, there are things.
It's lopsided,
but
there's a justification for the lopsidedness, but it's still lopsided. Yeah,
it's still lopsided.
You can always make a justification.
They're getting something.
Well, your point, Dan, is well taken. It's also perhaps the worst commentary I've ever heard on college athletics. It's like, the only way to keep the best thing in college sports is if you just say, bend us over and take our money right now because we can do that to you. Otherwise, screw the tournament. Screw all of it. We'll go play a tournament that nobody wants and nobody likes, but we'll do it. Like, okay, oh, well, that's a great justification. Okay, fantastic. Great system.
I mean, they're going to play. Bowl games are still in the playoff. This is it. This is college sports. They don't care.
Clearly, they don't care. Clearly,
it is an absolute ridiculous commentary on the state of college athletics. But as we just said, Jaden Rashada's wandering around getting promised the moon. Jim Delaney dragged his feet, and now here we are with a lawsuit that proves the Rashadas of the world should have been getting stuff, and now we got to repay the guys before him, and the whole thing goes in a circle, and this is where we're at. And so at least if you're a college sports fan, you're going, hey, we might keep the NCAA basketball tournament as is for the next 6, 8, 10 years. At this limited stage where we now have a Pac-2, I mean, it's something. A rare victory.
It is something.
It's something.
The little things.
We got nothing.
Victories.
We're losing, right? We're on a low. Fans are on a losing streak. No, the sports, we have a playoff coming. We got a video game coming. We got lots of great things coming. But nobody wants to lose the NCAA tournament. Hey, well, maybe it sticks around for 6 to 10 years because there's an incentive to do it. These guys only care about money, and that's where we're at. Let's get to the final piece of this, okay? As it all plays out. Past, present,
Act
future.
Act 4.
Act 4. I mean, come on, man. Practically, Shakespeare was 3 acts, right? Everything was 3 acts.
Yeah.
The new Shakespeare.
You're running long on Shakespeare.
The new Billy S. Yeah. Should have had to combine it. The schools are saying that they don't have the money for this revenue share. Part of the house case is they're going to have to share $20-30 million. I still have absolutely no idea how they're negotiating against no one about this, but we'll find out. They're going to have to pay the players directly, revenue share, some form, and this is going to cost them millions of dollars, as Ross just pointed out, and we don't have the money. What are we going to do? Where are we going to come up with this money? Now, I would posit that everyone knew this was coming for years and years and years and years. And rather than save for the day that inevitably your labor costs were no longer close to zero, tuition, room, and board, you guys built like recording studios in the locker room and $14,000 locker.
Yes. Dan,
sleep pods, mini golf courses. Slides,
alien spaceships for a lockers.
Right, you redid the entrance to the recruiting room on game day for the third time in 6 years. You You got more private jet time for all your coaches. You had
$100,000 bowl bonus for a coach going 6-6 for a bowl, $100,000. Yeah, that's where we are.
Those Pop-Tart bowls don't pay for themselves. All of this. Instead of saying, gee, you know what? We might need some money going forward. These guys just maxed out the credit card. I mean, they're like 27% APR. Where's like, what? Hey, what? We got debt service on this softball facility that is nicer than Dodger Stadium. But good Lord, we went 13-9, man. You know? So they spent all the money, of course. They paid all retired commissioners nearly $6 million. Hey, whatever. They did defensive I thought that defensive coordinator was going to work out, so I signed him to a 3-year, $6 million deal, and then he couldn't cover the spread. He got torched by 63, so we're going to pay him, and now he coaches for the rival. Anyway, all of this goes on. So now these guys are looking to private equity. Private equity has come in, and Ross has a fascinating.
Private capital, Dan.
Private capital,
quote unquote.
I'm sorry, different than equity. That is true. They will not own part of your favorite football team, but they will own your future profits. So Ross's story, excellent. Again, go to Yahoo Sports. Ross, you've been on fire, man. I tease you for being part-time. You leave the pod a lot, but you come back with really good stuff. So
thanks.
Well, right. You're bringing more to the table than Pat. I mean, let's put that down.
I got other things to do.
Pat's busy covering golf and horse racing. Like, come on.
Yeah, he's got a lot.
Redbird Capital is coming up with this plan, and so you could sit there and say, "Hey, I need 50, I need 100 million, I need more," and you will get maybe 20% of future revenue until you're paid back. It may drop down until they make their money over the next 10 to 20 years, if there's no future revenue. Greg Sankey in your story had a very interesting point. He didn't really want to get into whether schools are going to go for this. But if they go private capital, he said, hey, you say, I want to buy a stock in that. Like, people want to buy a stock in college football. That's basically what they're saying. And he's got a great point. The sport is extremely healthy despite all the belly aching. So we go from Jaden Rashada finally getting money, and it's all confusing. We get Jim Delaney getting the last vestiges of this insane previous program that only paid guys like him. We got the house case where everyone's now battling over billions, and now we got everyone going, oh no, I major power football school doesn't have the money, so I'm going to have to sell out some of my future revenue to private capital.
All kind of ties together, doesn't it, Dan? All part of your plan. So 3 weeks ago, maybe, I set in on a presentation from, Drew Weatherford, former Florida State quarterback, and now is over Weatherford Capital, one of the founders with his brothers of Weatherford Capital, an investment firm and private equity investment firm. And, he gave me the presentation, the slide decks that he has shown, about officials from about 50 FBS colleges over the last 10 to 12 months. He's kind of had these clandestine type meetings with ADs, even university presidents and board members about private capital, which is different than private equity. As Dan mentioned, they will not, the gist is they give you a pot of money. They want to partner with 5 to 10 schools, and they're going to give you anywhere from $50 million to $200 million of immediate cash. And then over the next 10 to 20 years, they take a percentage of your growth, only your growth. They take a percentage. It would start potentially at 22%. And as by the time you get to the end of the deal, it's supposed to be right at 2%, depending on how much growth you've had, because at some point they have to make back their money, obviously. And so that's kind of how it would work. They wouldn't buy, or you wouldn't pawn away part of your department to them to operate. Although they would do that if you want. Their goal is to be more, though, of an advisor to help increase revenues in certain ways, because they have an incentive for revenues to increase, because they only get a portion, again, of your increase, your growth in revenue. So at a time when college administrators are looking for cash, and they've really been for the last 5 to 8 years, it feels like. I mean, we've gotten here through the arms race, right, of coaching salaries and facilities upgrades. And it's gotten to the point where I think Weatherford it's gotten to the point of on the brink of exhaustion, of exhausting. And I think he's right for a lot of schools. They're on the brink of exhausting their donor base. When it comes to raising money for salaries, raising money for NIL. And of course, the easy answer, right, is, well, just reduce the salaries. Well, when you sign a contract and you're in a competitive recruiting environment for coaches and players, you can't do that. You don't do that. And they're not going to do that. So they need cash. And I think this is an outlet that many are looking at. I talked to 3 power conference athletic directors who are far down the road in this and could very soon complete and finalize a type of deal like this.
Yeah, this is a life raft for people who cannot and will not exercise any fiscal restraint. So this is the latest. When you won't stop spending, you got to find new cash, and this is it. I'll be interested to see like what percentage they would take of your revenue. You know what their cut is in this sort of thing. The other
start
thing,
at 22, Pat.
Okay.
The slides I've seen start like the first, you know, they probably do change and such, but I think the first, got it in front of me, the first 5 years, maybe they take, yes, the first 5 years, they would take 22% of your growth in revenue. And then the next 5, they would take 10% of your growth in revenue. And then the last 5, they would take 2% of your growth in revenue. But at a certain point, they would meet their principal investment. They would get it back. And then they would take a small portion along the way, the rest of the way.
Okay. So the other interesting thing about this that jumped out to me, this is from a Sportico story, is that January 2nd, a Delaware LLC called Collegiate Athletic Solutions Platform was formed. That was going to be working in this space, right? And the CAS website is currently password protected with a landing page that says, quote unquote, coming soon. The company has one employee listed on LinkedIn, Newman Delaney, the son of former Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney. Who's identified as a senior vice president. It all connects.
Fantastic. I mean, this is the greatest podcast of all time. We need to win a Tony or something for this. Or whatever the award is.
Whatever they do for podcasts.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Neither a borrower nor a lender be.
There you go.
Second Shakespeare reference of the pod.
That's a good line.
I should be clear about something on the breakdown. And I think there are different models, but the one that was shown to me was a $50 million investment into an athletic department. And the first 5 years, 22%, 22.5% to be exact, of your growth would go to the investor until the capital is returned. So I didn't say that earlier. But this slide shows that basically until the $50 million is met, you will be giving away 22% of your growth in revenue. Once the capital is met, it drops to 10% for a certain amount of years, and then it drops to 2% conceivably by the end of the deal. But again, it's all based on how much revenue you grew, and thus how much they took in order to get back that capital investment. I don't know if I've ever had a story recently that has set off so many comments to that the words private equity do in college athletics and in general in society, it seems. It's been interesting to see kind of the backlash on the comments and my phone and other things lighting up. People just kind of immediately, I think it has been a visceral reaction. But
I like watching you get yelled at like it's your plan. That's what was my favorite.
Yeah, I know, right?
Like, you guys know what a reporter is?
Don't shoot the messenger, right? Don't shoot the messenger, Dan. But I think everybody needs to understand, and I thought I would try to get it across in the story and even in the post on social, is it is private capital. So they won't own a portion of the department. I think people are assuming, though, that if you let them in, they give you all this money, that eventually they will have an impact on the department, perhaps negatively.
A little confused on how you could even sell part of like the Alabama Crimson Tide, but I suppose that would take like trust. I mean, this would be,
well,
I'm not sure.
This is another story in itself, but I mean, schools are talking about doing
licensing,
that too.
Right. Licensing.
Licensing their ticket department.
So,
hey, we're just going to farm it out. And you give us a guarantee. That's being discussed as well.
So although I adhere to the Shakespeare bit of the borrowing and lending, I think this can be a good thing. And I know people flip out because it is private capital and it's something different and all of that. But basically, if the parameters of the deal is what Ross just explained, if you're Boston College, you're Pittsburgh, right? And you're staring out at the future going, I don't know if we can compete any longer, right? I don't know what, we're getting crunched here. We're not Ohio State. We're not Florida State, but we got to compete against those two. And there's all this money coming. And what are we going to do? We don't want to cut sports. We don't want to do this, right? And if you're the fan of this, you want the University of Pittsburgh to have a viable football program. You want those types of schools to be able to do this. And so this offers a deal where, let's say you have $100 million in revenue and you borrow this money and your revenue stream goes up to $110 million next year. You give 22% of that, so $2.2 million per year of the growth of the $10 million. You only grow $7.8 million. You give it to Weatherford and his guys. But in doing so, you have the money to compete and continue to pay the athletes as it, right. The way we're staring at it right now is there's going to be a cutoff where people just have to give up. And so by providing the capital against that, the future earnings, the future growth, you are offering a lifeline for a lot of institutions to continue to be able to do this. Now, it's somewhere down the road. The people that aren't paying, Ohio State maybe doesn't need it, and they're keeping their extra 22% of growth. And that, so it extends, and their growth might be 20 million per year or 30 million more. It doesn't solve the long-term problem. But what we do not want to see, I don't think anyone listening to this podcast wants to see, is the invariable, well, there's only going to be 45 schools. Same thing as like, let's just find a way to save the NCAA basketball tournament, can we? And so to me, yeah, not ideal, but this is a viable solution if you're one of these schools sitting on the edge going, how do I make this work? I'm a Big 12 school. I'm never going to be able to make as much as these others. I can't keep doing this. Well, here's a way to do it. And it's a 10 to 20 year plan that might make it for you. And that extends as far as we can pretty much see how this is going. I like this option. I like the creativity here. And I like it a heck of a lot better if it's private capital than private equity. Now, in terms of the visceral reactions, they didn't probably read your story. They probably didn't read the text of the tweet, and they literally, and as I did at the beginning, interchange equity and capital, right? But even so, it's a different thing. This is basically not a whole lot different than a bank loan that they already took out to build a facility that they didn't need. So I like this. I don't know what the pratfall would be, except long-term it's not a solution, but I'd rather try to deal with that in the long term than the ACC going, as we discussed last episode, you know what, we need to kick six schools out. I don't want that.
Yeah, I'm with you, actually. You know, I mean, I did, as much as I am disdainful of the logic behind trying to save the NCAA basketball tournament, this is a school-to-school economic decision that could keep a lot of people, quote-unquote, in the game longer, and I have no problem with it. That's an individual decision for a school that, like, hey, this is, and you know, hopefully you get a good sense from your fan base. What do we want? Do we want Pittsburgh and Boston College and Syracuse and Kansas State and Iowa State to play with the big boys or not? And if the answer is yes, we want to, then okay, this is one of the means by which we can do it. Private equity is a much scarier term than private capital. Private equity is, you know, done massive damage, say, to the journalism industry. When you give away actual control of a product, it's a little bit worrisome. But in this situation, the way it's outlined at the moment, that doesn't seem to be a case where you just turn to some, you know, mercenary bottom line businessman and say, save us. This is a little bit of a different deal. So I don't have a major problem with this at all.
One of the slides when they during this presentation obviously is geared toward, you know, encouraging college athletic administrators to do this. And so one of the slides I thought was pretty interesting, though I didn't write about it, but I'll mention it here, is a slide on the last 10 college football national champions, or the last nine. 8 of the 9 in the current CFP format were in the top 15 in football program spending in that fiscal year that they won the championship. So 8 of the last 9 were in the top 15. LSU in 2019, surprisingly enough, was the one, the outsider that was in 25th in football spending. But a couple of times, I think Alabama, you know, was won it 3 times over that stretch, and they were first, and second in football spending. Georgia 4th, 13th, Clemson 8th, Ohio State 8th the year they won it, and Michigan was 11th last year. So that's a way they, you know, hey, you need money, right? Resources correlate to football success.
Poor Texas A&M. I know they had some more. Texas A&M fans is going to be like, I don't want to know what number one is. Don't tell me what number one is. Don't tell us. If you go to private equity, to Pat's point, and a businessman comes into a college athletic program, let's say the Ohio State Athletic Department, it gets handed over to private equity somehow, and that decision is the decisions on how to make money, because that's what we're trying to do, because we have either stockholders or whatever we have. They're going, okay, we will have a football, a men's basketball, maybe a women's basketball team, because there's a growth possibility there, and that's it. Oh, and Rutgers and Maryland and Minnesota, we got to kick these guys out. That's what they're doing. Because if everybody here, you don't have to be a business genius to say, how would I maximize profit? You know how you maximize profit if you own an NFL team? You don't sponsor a track team. You're just the Cleveland Browns. You don't have Cleveland Browns track, Cleveland Browns wrestling. You don't have that stuff. And you don't sit there and say, hey, let's expand the league and put an NFL team in Tulsa or Iowa City. So it would be, private equity would totally destroy college athletics. So private capital, this deal, I like it. It's a loan opportunity. It at least provides that chance. Any other thoughts? Because the four-act play has gone. I mean, this is some serious smart. You guys are smarter now than you were at the beginning. Look what we did for you.
Yeah.
Because I got one dumb story to get to.
Get to the dumb.
Let's get to the dumb. It's Memorial Day weekend. Thank you to all who served, and I hope everyone has a great weekend celebrating that, remembering why. One final people's court here. You would think the people in Lincoln, Nebraska would be pretty happy right now with the Dylan Raiola situation. They got this star freshman quarterback, look good in the spring game. You'd think there'd be a spring of contentment. Not so much for 133-year-old man. who is apparently outraged about the Nebraska Department of Motor Vehicles, the DMV. And I think everyone's had maybe a moment of frustration or two at the DMV. But not like this. Nebraska DMV opened a new office in Lincoln, Nebraska. And it's supposed to be much more modern and they'll be faster and all this stuff. But this 33-year-old got really ticked off, and it's from the Lincoln Journal. He entered Lincoln's new Nebraska Department of Motor Vehicles Service Center last week and caused nearly $9,000 worth of damage by throwing fish and carrots around.
What?
Fish and carrots. Okay. Sounds like a horrible meal that my mother used to pawn off during Lent back in the day. That sounds like something, a terrible Irish meal on from my childhood. What do we have in the night? Fish and carrots.
Just throw some peas in there.
And you'll like it.
Because of Jesus. Because of Jesus. Okay. Thanks. My 9-year-old brain is not processing the connection here. You can't
blame the
complain.
Lord and Savior.
You can't complain because Jesus is involved. All right. So shut up. Eat your fish and eat your carrots. Damn heathen. You'll burn in hell if you don't say it's good. Anyway. Anyone with an Irish mother who couldn't cook, knows. Boil some more chicken, please. Anyway, Friday about 2:15, officers responded to the DMV at 4700 Cattle Drive of reports of a man throwing fish around. Joseph Schrader allegedly walked into the service center, which opened that day, grand opening, and said, "There's something fishy going on," before tossing fish and carrots around the side. I don't know the carrots. Police estimate. What is this fish? There's not enough details. Police
There's way too many, way too few details so
Schrader's far. Schrader's actions resulted in $8,000 worth of damage.
Hard were these carrots?
How many fish?
How big was the fish?
Speaking of Jesus, he just had endless fish. He just crazy.
Right, yeah. Yes. Is that what this is? This is loaves and fishes? Like,
maybe this was.
Yeah.
5,000 in damage to the carpet, 3,000 to the white ceiling tiles and blue backdrops. Brand new. The DMV's trying out there in Nebraska. They're trying. They set up this brand new thing, and you just come in and destroy it. He was charged with criminal mischief and a $1,000 bond. Quickly, penalty? Justice 40, what do you got?
He's got to be kicked out of the state. I mean, he's got to be incarcerated, and he's got to be out of the state. This is a massive crime against
the state.
Yes, you can. Sure, you can.
Who takes him? Who takes him? South
Dakota? Put him on a barge. Put him on a barge out in the Pacific.
It's Nebraska. They don't got the Pacific.
Then you just put him on a wagon to get to the coast, and then you put him on a barge. Get rid of the dude. Like, this is
isolation.
This is a fairly heinous crime, although, yeah, it's very light on details. What kind of fish? How many fish? Was he, like, trying to bury people in fish? And again, the carrots, a very weird non sequitur there, the carrot involvement. And I had a lot of bad Lenten fish meals because of Jesus, so I feel your pain there.
Lenten Fridays, man, they were tough. Yeah. They were tough, yeah.
Yeah.
He should be made to eat these combination of these things for the rest of his life,
that'll
at least
do
once
it.
A day.
That'll there do it. Go. He would become a good Catholic really quick, or a bad one. I don't know. But, yeah, go ahead. All right. I don't know what's happening. I hope your Memorial Day weekend is better than the DMV, poor DMV workers. You know, they were like, trotting, hey, man, we got the new office. Like at a DMV, they got to wear that thing out before they get a new one. I mean, like, this place sucks. Like the lighting's bad. The carpet's worn. We got a new place there. Those poor workers were strutting in all excited. And this clown throws fish all around. Man, I don't know what's happening in the world, but that's our show. Please continue to listen. Share us on social media. Tell your friends about us, please. And I mean, that was a hell of a pod for me. Hell of a pod. Good work, gentlemen.
Four-act tour de force.
Absolute force of nature. College Football Inquirer. and it's free. Talk to you later.